hand-wringing. Hand-wringing in Washington and across America. And I'm going to tell you why. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KBC. Actually, this hand-wringing is even occurring across the pond. Nigel Farage, who now is a Fox News analyst previously, he's sort of the could have been the Trump of Great Britain, right? The voice of Brexit, exactly. And he's a Trump friend, a Trump supporter. He was probably one of the bigger rock stars at the Republican National Convention in Cleveland. When I was there, he was the hot ticket. Everybody wanted to see, because he's somebody who early on supported Trump. Anyway, so what he's saying is I think a lot of Trump supporters are going to be confused by the president's actions in Syria. I mean, after all, haven't we heard from Trump for years now, even preceding the campaign? Various opinions to the effect that we should not be engaging in Syria, that Obama should leave Syria to the Syrians, that there's no win, it's all downside. And we should stay as far away from Syria as possible. And this thinking has been perpetrated today. All day I'm watching the press, I'm following the news, I'm reading things, and I see Trump's tweets coming back. This is what every journalist is pulling out his tweets from I think 2 years ago, saying, Obama, don't touch the Syria thing. So what do I think? Do I think that this is going to have any bearing on Trump's support, on Trump's political support from his base? No. Not one bit. And I'm going to explain exactly why, and I'm going to get into what happened, and I'm going to explain then why that translates into the point that I'm trying to make. So instead of doing it backwards forwards, I'll start off with the conclusion. The psychology of the Trump voter is not a purely an ideological one. Okay, ideology is one part of it, but the other part of it, you got to understand, a lot of people, if not most, of Trump support came from people who were frustrated by Obama's sort of lofty, intellectual weakness that he projected around the world. People didn't like it. People thought of Obama as this pontificator, a talker. Someone who led from behind. In fact, I had it here somewhere in my stack of stuff. Colonel Peters, who also is a Fox News analyst, just I think writing for the New York Post, he delivered a exactly the kind of reaction that I think Farage doesn't understand or didn't quite capture. Which is to say, yes, finally America is leading. That's not to say we're getting entangled in it. Who knows what's coming after this? But it was a decisive strike, a decisive act. And it also, incidentally, coincided with a lot of things that were going on at the same time. Context, folks, context is everything. Well, one of those contexts was that as the 59 missiles are raining down on Syria, Trump is what is he doing? He's having hors d'oeuvres with the Chinese president. And mind you, the Chinese president is to North Korea what Russia is to Syria. China, right, is North Korea's closest ally. And who has been in the news this whole time? Who's the pot-bellied pig dictator from Pyongyang? The guy who killed his half-brother, right? Had him poisoned in the airport. Crazy guy. Well, he's been firing off test rockets and creating, stirring up all kinds of trouble. What kind of message do you think it sends when you act decisively like this? Look, the gas attack happened on Tuesday. Trump stood up, said, this is not going to work. This is not good. This is unacceptable. He didn't say there's going to be a red line. He didn't threaten anything. He didn't wag his finger sanctimoniously the way Obama did for 6 years. Don't you dare. And in fact, this big discussion about should he have gone to Congress, that's nothing. I mean, I'll explain a little bit about that later in the program if we've got time. But the whole issue there is that when Obama did that, the one time Obama did go to Congress was for Syria. And it wasn't because he finally remembered what the Constitution was. It was because Obama was looking for political cover. And then when Congress did what Congress does and falls apart and didn't give him what he needed, he shrugged his shoulders and said, look, I tried. But his intention never was to be decisive. It projected weakness, created a vacuum for Russia. Russia then seized control, has become until yesterday, the undisputed top dog actor in the region. And when you look at where Syria is, where you look at this, you look at where neighbor of Israel, important location in the Middle East, right off the Mediterranean. You got to understand, and by the way, where are all of the refugees that are killing Europe, that are coming over here? Where are all those refugees coming from? From Syria. So I think, I'm telling you, if you want to know my opinion on this, it's that the people that are hand wringing over what are Trump supporters going to do, and is this going to wobble his support? Nonsense. I think it's a non-issue. I think what depends, however, is what happens from this point forward, because what a lot of Trump supporters, a lot of Americans don't want is invasions, nation building, and Iraq 2.0. No one has an appetite for that. And that type of engagement, that kind of outlay of resources, of lives, of infrastructure, money, anyone say money? That kind of cost is something that would, I think, more profoundly contradict Trump's long-held views. There's a difference between delivering a pimp slap and all-out war, invasion, and takeover. And this is where I'm not exactly sure what to make of it, because taking Trump at his word, I mean, he's making some noises about regime change, which is another way of saying removing Bashar al-Assad, the president of Syria, and, presumably finding some other replacement for him. And considering at least that for the last 3 or 4 weeks, Democrats have been talking about regime change in Washington and how they're going to impeach Trump, I like the fact that we have a little respite here. In fact, I'll tell you, I almost could not believe my ears today. People, you wouldn't believe this. Did you guys have a chance to watch CNN? Were you watching today at all? Live CNN, I would say, I did. I watched at least 3 hours of CNN. And I still have some brain to show for it. But, it was complimentary. I was confused. I'm not going to say pro-Trump. It was complimentary. And then there was a great thing that happened. Oh, I don't know. If you've missed this, good thing I have it for you. Because this also illustrates. See, now, first, very complimentary. And as the afternoon devolved into some great, they ran out of the headlines. So now they're getting kind of beyond. They're trying to come up with a narrative of why Trump is a hypocrite, or why ways to critique Trump. Because it's CNN. Of course. Now, they start to find some criticisms, and they're going back to the tweets. I mentioned those. They're talking about Trump supporters. I love when CNN, by the way, tries to speak for conservatives. So that was entertaining. But then I don't know. Did you catch this thing? Who was this? Brooke Baldwin. She does this interview with a guy, Kasim Ayed, and he is a Syrian guy. She's got him on Skype. He's in Syria. He's talking. He's a survivor of the 2013 chemical attack. Remember, because this has happened before, these chemical attacks. And she's got him live on her show. And Brooke Baldwin basically asked him, so she says, you know, tell us what your impressions are. And this is what Kasim Ayed, speaking for Syrians, right, and speaking about what had just happened, about the missile strikes that were launched by the United States. This is what he said on Brooke Baldwin on CNN just a little bit earlier today.
I woke up, I saw a lot of texts on my phone, I saw the news, I cried out of joy, I jumped, I thanked God, I was overwhelmed. We've been asking for protection, we've been asking for consequences for more than 6 years. And today, for the first time, it happened. For the very first time, we see Assad held accountable, just for once, held accountable for his crimes against humanity. I was overwhelmed. I felt grateful for President Trump. I felt grateful for the United States.
Yeah, and now that Brooke Baldwin was getting visibly, I wish I could show this to you. You got to take my word for it that her face started to contort a little bit. And you could see that this pro-Trump narrative coming straight out of Syria, this could not be allowed. So she tries to salvage the situation, and here's what she says.
There are people in America, and I hear you supportive of President Trump, and so many people are, Democrats and Republicans, but there are also people over here in America who are saying, all right, so clearly President Trump is motivated by just, as we all have compassion for these just horrible images of these babies who were killed. But at the same time, this is a man who, you know, doesn't want Syrians to come into this country with this refugee ban. I want to just play some sound. Hillary Clinton weighed in.
Okay, and I'm going to spare you the Hillary Clinton clip, but I'll tell you, basically Hillary says something along the lines of, now she's talking about Trump, I also hope that they will recognize that we cannot in one breath speak of protecting Syrian babies and in the next close America's doors to them. And this was when Hillary was putting her own 10 cents in about the travel ban. And now I'll tell you, now it gets good, because here you go. Here is what Kasim Ayed says to Brooke Baldwin and shuts her down.
With all due respect, I didn't see each and every person who was demonstrating after the travel ban. I didn't see you 3 days ago when people were gassed to death, when civilians were gassed to death. I didn't see you in 2013 when 1,400 people were gassed to death. I didn't see you raising your voice against President Obama's inaction in Syria that made us refugees get kicked out of Syria. If you really care about refugees, if you really care about helping us, please help us stay in our country. We don't want to come to the United States. We want to stay in our country. With all due respect, this is hypocrisy.
Now she starts to panic.
If you really care, help us stay in our country. We don't want
to
become refugees. We want to stay in our country. Help us establish safe zones. Help us stay safe in our country. And if you just give me a few seconds,
she means to say shut up.
Tell President Trump once again, please, sir, what you did was amazing. What
you
did was a powerful message of hope for a lot of people inside and outside of Syria. Please don't stop on this. Please help Syrians stay in their country.
Oh my gosh. In one short clip, this guy totally shuts down the entire narrative of the berserk left, which has been Trump hates women, hates minorities, hates foreigners, hates everybody. And we're right, and we're the conscience of the world, right? That's what liberals think. And in one evening, Donald Trump did more did more to protect those people in Syria than Obama did in 6 years. So when you ask me, what do Trump supporters think of all of this? I think they like it. I do. I think it's good stuff. And to understand it better, you got to go back for a little context. Did you know that Susan Rice played a role in all of this? In all this chemical weapons stuff? I didn't want to stop talking about her, did I? All right, we'll be back right after this. You gotta hang in for this. Murjovsky, so you know that I think right maybe 2 days before the inauguration of President Donald J. Trump, Susan Rice went, now you remember her, right, from I don't know, yesterday's news cycle? She's the gal who was unmasking all the names that were picked up in those intercepts. You know, and is probably the key person responsible for leaking all the bad stuff about about General Flynn and others in the Trump transition team. So Susan Rice. Now, she was being interviewed around the time of the inauguration by NPR. And who was it here? Rachel Martin. So this, by the way, if you're a liberal, you're on NPR. This is you're in softball land, right? I mean, this is puff piece, best example of, and so she's on there and they're talking about Syria, and oh my goodness! Now I'll just play for you. Here's what she says about the chemical facilities, about Obama's their plan, their engagement, and how they. According to Susan Rice, how Obama and the Obama administration ended up saving the day in Syria. Listen to this.
We had put in place the assets necessary to use force to try to strike at those chemical facilities and command and control entities that we thought were relevant to our chemical weapons concern.
So why didn't it happen?
Because in the meantime, we were able to find a solution that actually removed the chemical weapons that were known from Syria in a way that the use of force would never have accomplished.
Do you see what just happened there? So we heard that during the campaign. That was the big ta-da from the Obama people and from Hillary during the campaign. The idea was that, well, yes, you're right. We drew a line. We drew a red line. We talked about it. We threatened. We banged our pots and pans, but we didn't have to do anything. Because and the way it unfolded was that there ended up being an agreement brokered by Russia, right? The same people that are saying Trump is giving Russia a pass because he's in bed with them. These are the people that said, yeah, your closest ally. Sure. We're going to have the Russians come in and we're going to have them monitor and oversee and guarantee that they remove these weapons of mass destruction, these chemical weapons. And everyone in the media just folded their hands together. And just said, oh, how nice. Oh, you smart, smart people. Susan, tell me more. And like that was the narrative. And nobody questioned it. Nobody was concerned about it. Well, we of course thought it was nonsense here, but you listen to this program. So this kind of stuff, and this is why what Trump did is so powerful. Because he literally did exactly the opposite of what Obama did for 6 years. He just acted. Period. Pressed the button, sent the missiles, and said, all right. Now you know what I'm about. And he did one more thing that I think is really important. Do you remember that press conference with the King of Jordan. And one of the things, one of Trump's answers in the press conference is very important. I don't know if you caught it, but he said that he was willing to be flexible, that he was not an ideologue. Do you remember that? So what Trump is saying, the thing that you do not want to be when you are the head of a powerful military, when you're responsible for big strategic decisions and big strategic places, you do not want to be predictable. And Trump showed the world that while he may have been tweeting for years about how he's a non-interventionist, he's willing to be flexible. And that means he is unpredictable. This is huge. All right. I'll talk a little more about this when we come back, give you some examples of it. And I also will tell you there are some things going on behind the scenes at the Trump White House that concern me deeply. And I want to tell you about that when we come back. KBC News next. Sam Rejovsky here, Sam Nation on Talk Radio 790 KBC. Bottom of the hour, Friday night, we are in the kill zone, so to speak. So talking about those 59 Tomahawk cruise missiles that struck a Syrian airbase, Al-Sharat airfield, which was the airbase that had supposedly where the chemical attack on Tuesday from which it had been launched. So that was apparently determined to be ground zero. And incidentally, if nothing else happens, if this is it, what's the message? Right. So if there's no follow up, there's no ground invasion, there's no step 2, 3, 4, and 5. What's the message? What's the Trump doctrine when it comes to this? All right. Yeah, no, exactly. Look, if Assad launches a chemical attack, he better be prepared to lose the airport from which he launched it. Done. And I think he only has 7 left. So there it is. Launch an attack, lose an airport. Tit for tat. I think it's, I don't think it's an empty move. I don't at all. And again, it does more to enforce non-proliferation of chemical weapons than anything that happened in the previous 6 years under Obama. Nikki Haley, who is our UN ambassador, a former Trump foe, now turned UN ambassador, she delivered a blistering rebuke. I saw this happen live, and I literally, a little piece of me shrunk up inside. Wow. I listening to her, here, let me play to you this important clip, and I'll tell you here's what she's talking about. She's speaking at the UN. The Russian ambassador had just finished delivering some very long, tedious, boring remarks. And she lays out exactly what happened and why.
The Russian government also bears considerable responsibility. Every time Assad has crossed the line of human decency, Russia has stood beside him. We had hoped the Security Council would move forward, but Russia made it known, as it has done 7 times before, that it would use its veto once again, covering up for the Assad regime. But it's even more than that. Russia is supposed to be a guarantor of the removal of chemical weapons from Syria. But obviously, that has not happened.
Nope.
As innocent Syrians continue to be murdered in chemical attacks. Let's think about the possible reasons for Russia's failure. It could be that Russia is knowingly allowing chemical weapons to remain in Syria.
Yep.
It could be that Russia has been incompetent in its efforts to remove the chemical weapons. Or it could be that the Assad regime is playing the Russians for fools.
That is a lose-lose-lose situation for the Russians, okay? Any of those three options is not good. And she exactly references the point I made earlier, which is, in the last segment, I'm talking about Susan Rice and that terrible, now totally ill-advised, poorly timed interview that she did for NPR back in January, where she's boasting, as we heard time and time again from Obama people, how they were able to broker a deal that eradicated, removed all chemical weapons from Assad's arsenals without firing a single shot. The only problem is, if that deal really worked, because this is what Nikki Haley is saying, right? The subtext of it is, we all, you and I, we saw those pictures. They're all over the internet. They're all over the news. They're on Facebook. It's not fake news. Those chemical weapons came from somewhere. And it's not like this is something that just sort of could have happened by some, like, Dr. Evil or somebody. You know? I mean, it apparently the Russians, who are supposed to guarantee that those weapons were gone, didn't. And we came in and took care of it. And this just puts Trump in such a power position. And the Russians are seething. So much for Trump and Putin being in cahoots, huh? How about that? All right, back after this. So the rumors, they're not rumors. I'm getting some substantiated reports about this, that there is an imminent shakeup will be happening at the White House. And I'm concerned about it. Now, I'm going to tell you why. Sam Rzhovsky here, Sam Nation on Talk Radio 790 KBC. So the idea that there's two different sources are saying two different things. I've heard that both Steve Bannon and Rance Priebus, Steve Bannon being, of course, the chief strategist in the White House, and then Rance Priebus being the chief of staff, are both that Rance is going to be out and that Bannon's going to be reassigned. And essentially, I've read reassigned, and then I've heard basically that it's going to be a significant demotion. Now I'm very concerned about this, I'll explain why in a sec. I'm much more concerned about Bannon than I am about Priebus. Let me address Priebus first. So Rance, remember Rance is the guy who came into the White House. He was the former head of the Republican Party, right? The chair of the Republican Party. Where he didn't necessarily in the beginning do a whole lot to help Trump. In fact, I would have described Rance as a bit of an anti-Trumper. And as the race evolved and such, my impression was always that it was very begrudgingly got on the bandwagon. And I was surprised. I'm not going to lie. I was always surprised when I saw Trump really embraced him. And I logicked. That this embrace of Rance was because Trump saw in him an important tool. That is, that Rance was going to be a guy who would be Trump's, I don't know, seeing eye dog slash, Congress whisperer, right? He was going to be somebody who would be Trump's tour guide through the swamp. You know, and Trump needed that. Look, the White House, it's the most political institution there is. In order to drain the swamp, you got to know the swamp. And so you might need one or two swamp things in there to help you out with that process. So I saw Rance as a useful tool, and you can read in whatever definition for the word tool that you want. I did not think that Rance was a particularly effective leader. And I've everything that I've heard and read and seen is that he's a micromanager, that he's fussy, he gets lost in the quagmire of details, and that he has brought in a number of loyalists into the White House who are not effective at advancing Trump's agenda. They're effective at advancing their own careers. which is exactly why people voted Trump in, because they don't want people like that in Washington. I don't know, am I missing something? So the fact that they're talking about Rance, you know, Rance maybe hitting the road is not, I welcome it. Now, when I hear Kevin McCarthy, who's a congressman from California, I hear about him being touted as a replacement. I mean, I get sick to my stomach because that's, you know, that's out of the frying pan into the fire. But when I come back, I want to address this Bannon thing. Because to me, Bannon is the heart and soul of the Trump comeback. Bannon's ideology, make no mistake, the reason that the left trains so much of its fire at him is that his view of Washington is exactly the heart and soul of Trump's winning campaign and of what the voters want. I mean, remember when we talked about this? Remember, I'm going to go back to the campaign. It was change, and they wanted politics as usual out of Washington. So losing Bannon, well, I'll talk a little more about it when we come back. So brief break. Stay tuned. Back right after this. It's Friday night, and everybody's out there. They're in traffic. It's bumper cars on the freeway. There are going to be accidents tonight, unfortunately. So stay safe. But if some idiot who is texting and simultaneously playing Pokemon Go rear-ends you on the 110 or on the 405 or wherever you might be sure you get some help. Will you do that for me? Don't get lost and stuck, you know, just trying to do it yourself, okay? Go with the lawyer that we trust on this program. Have him guide you through it. And you know who he is, right? Sweet James Bergner. That's right. He's our favorite lawyer. We trust him. He fights for you. He will make sure that you get what you deserve and that no one, not even the slimy insurance company, takes advantage of you in any way. You want to find when you get the representation that you need, it makes a world of difference. And it all starts with a phone call. Now, no recovery, no fee, right? You don't pay a dime until he settles your case. It's very important. But you got to make the call. 800-881-2021, 1-800-881-2021, or visit his website, sweetjames.com. All right, Sam Nation here talking about intrigue, palace intrigue inside the Trump White House, and addressing reports that both Rance Priebus and top Trump advisor Steve Bannon might be on the outs. Now, I was just telling you my thoughts on Rance, and no tears shed there. But Bannon, I'm telling you, there is an enormous amount of tension between, Jared Kushner? Kushner? It's Kushner, that's right. I always mess that up. So this is Trump's son-in-law, Ivanka's husband. And apparently there's a ton of tension between the two, and there's infighting, and there's some bickering back and forth. And here's where you know, it kind of depends on what's happening on the ground. On one hand, I see Trump's frustration. That is, his agenda will stall, and the machine that is the White House will not move forward at the pace that he needs if there is constant bickering, infighting, and trash talking. And if any of that is coming from Bannon, I get it. I get why Trump would be frustrated, as any person, as any leader ought to be. But, you know, there could be a real significant shift, a dangerous shift, if Bannon is out, if Rance is replaced with another hack political insider like Kevin McCarthy, congressman from California, he's a swamp thing, right? He's one of exactly what we don't want in Washington, career politician. And if the America first, right? If the shaving government down ideology that Bannon has been the loudest and most ardent proponent of, if that part of the Trump agenda starts to tone down, I have some serious concerns. I really do. So we will follow this as it develops, and of course I'll keep you posted on all these developments. Now, next week, we are here every night, Monday through Friday. I'm really excited, and I want to thank you. I want to thank each and every one of you for listening to the show, for making this program what it is. I'm so happy to spend this hour with you every night, and I look forward to doing it 5 days a week. We're going to have so much fun. I can hardly wait. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KBC. Choose not the life of imitation, distant from